What's up? Yeah, number 29.
Something like that. 29, is it 29?
29, yeah. 29 episodes.
Wow.
Sounds like a lot. Sounds like a lot.
Wow.
No need.
It is a lot. We've done good, though. We've had a few guests here and there.
Yeah, I had a phone call today at the shop. Chris, he wanted to give us some feedback. Interesting feedback. Interesting.
Really?
Yeah.
Anything good?
He said we should expand more on the topics. So, like, instead of doing V-Bar and doing like a 30,000 foot overview of V-Bar, we should do like a more in-depth little things.
Like a 10,000 foot overview?
Like a 1,000 feet overview.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Really diving in. We can. I have nothing against that.
Split it into more segments with more information each instead of like one episode and then, you know, it's done.
Okay.
So, yeah. He wanted to know about apps and things like that. We should do an episode in the future about the V-Control for sure.
Yeah,
and I'm expand
down.
On that.
I'm down.
Do you know anything about apps?
I know the radio has them. I know a few cool ones that I use. I don't know. We can go into what you and I use because you and I use the same ones basically.
He says that if you ask Mikado, they'll tell you to like install them all.
All of them.
Yeah, that's what they told him.
He says. One way to do it. I guess that's one way to do it.
Yeah.
Anyway.
That way, you're never missing anything. So, what's the name of this episode?
Your first year in the hobby. Some tips and tricks.
Tips and tricks.
Yeah. Well, you should do. This is covering...
Nobody's going to listen to this shit because everybody already has gone through the first year in the hobby. We have no more newbies anymore.
Well, if anyone here is listening and you have a weird uncle or a distant cousin who wants a weird uncle or a cousin that wants to learn to fly, you can give them this podcast and it's a general overview of what to do.
Hey, weird uncle, here's what you need to do. Nice.
Yep, but...
So what have you been up to, Kyle? Let's talk about this first.
A week since the last one. What have I done?
Nothing. That's the sad thing.
It really, it's true. The most exciting thing.
We didn't fly at all. Did you fly?
No.
Couldn't fly.
I didn't fly. No.
Nope. Nope.
Florida winter hit real hard. It was in the 50s on Saturday and probably 30-mile-an-hour winds, so we couldn't go.
Sunday. Saturday, you were committed Saturday. You were shopping.
Yeah, was I?
Yeah, Saturday you went shopping. I went for a bike ride Saturday. And I was thinking, yeah, tomorrow we're going to go fly. And I didn't even check the weather. And then I woke up Sunday morning. It was disgusting.
It's terrible.
Now our friends up north are going to laugh and they're going to think that we're pussies. But honestly, there's no fun in that.
No. No, we have it pretty made, though, comparatively. Because one day I woke up, I think on Sunday I woke up and I texted Olivia and I was like, oh, man, it's 50 here. This is terrible. She's like, it's 4 degrees outside. I don't want to hear it.
Yeah.
So.
But this is going to sound strange. If you're in the teens or the 20s and it's sunny and there's no wind, I feel like it's not much worse. I'm not saying it's worse, but it's not much worse. If it's sunny, no wind, and it's in the 20s, it's not much worse than if it's 50, it's cloudy, it's blowing 30 to 40 miles an hour, and it's misting.
True.
That is miserable. That is miserable. Because, like, first of all, the wind sucks. Yeah. Then you get this little, like pissing rain sort of thing, and then to top it off it's cloudy, so there's nothing to warm you up, like nothing's warming you, and it's 50 with a 40 mile an hour wind. It feels like 20s or 30s. Does.
I mean the wind is just takes away the fun, even if it's warm out. Takes away the fun.
And that's what we had Sunday. It was like blowing I mean in my backyard it must have been blowing a 30-35, and it's heavily protected by trees.
I know. I walked out in the morning. I'm like, wow, it's cold, but maybe I can go make something happen. Walked outside. I was like, nope, way too much wind. It's just going to be a waste of time out there.
Yeah.
No need.
So no flying.
No. I mean, the most notable thing I did was like bought a bed. I mean,
yeah,
that's about it. Yeah.
What a complete bedroom set.
I know. Nice. A whole bedroom set. Put a lot of money down in that. So that was fun. I mean, that's about it. That's really it. I didn't do anything else. The weekend was just...
That's pretty bad.
I figured out the bed on Saturday, and Sunday I just sat around. So.
That's terrible.
What about you?
What about helicopters? Helicopter projects. You have to have been wrenching on something.
Yeah, stuff here and there.
You've been slacking on wrenching, too.
I know.
Normally, you're pretty quick about wrenching. You've been slacking.
I know. That thing that you and I were talking about earlier is almost done, though.
Yeah, there's this project that Kyle's been working on. Thank you, by the way, for doing that. I appreciate it.
Just slowly. It'll be done, though.
We will unveil it soon. Yeah.
Oh, well, actually, I worked on the SAB video. I think he posted it today. The 6 points about the Drake 570.
Yeah.
Yeah, I made that, so.
Nice.
I did that over the weekend, so.
Nice.
Yeah.
I am long overdue for projects for helicopters. I have a lot of things that I have to do, but I've been lazy. Yeah.
Like?
I'm going to take this Thunder Sport that has the gold color scheme and I'm going to turn it into a Drake color scheme. Mm-hmm. And I have to fix it because I think the last time I flew it, I had a little boo-boo there.
Oh, boo-boo.
Yeah, I think my main blades reached out and stretched and touched my tail blades
somehow,
for no reason. Yeah,
somehow.
I don't know how that happened, but weird. Yeah. So I have to change blades. I'm going to change boom and canopy.
Yeah.
Give it a go around, a little bit of TLC. I got to get that done. And then...
should change dampers on that.
Yeah, a couple of things like that. I just got to get my fleet up and running and in good shape. Mm-hmm. So far, I only got two helicopters that are totally in good shape, which is not bad. But I should have three or four. Actually, I have three because my Nitro is running good.
You have four. You have four because I have your 570.
True, true. So, but I don't fly that thing.
No, you don't.
I like my 700s.
Yeah.
But it's just been a lazy, non-flying week. Crazy.
The weather's very unmotivating. If it was nice out, I'd be like, yeah, let's go do something. But it's like, man, it's chilly. And
yeah. For all of you guys listening, today's Tuesday, one day ahead of our release of the podcast. So as you listen to this podcast on Wednesday, we will be at the flying field flying.
Exactly.
We've decided we're going to take the afternoon and go fly all afternoon. Maybe do some video. Maybe, I don't know.
Something. We'll see.
Be cool, yeah.
Get some content for you. Maybe, I don't know, tips and tricks on something. We'll figure it out.
Yeah. I did have a long meeting with IRCHA.
Did you?
The whole IRCHA board. Everybody from the IRCHA board. Yeah, we had a Skype meeting. Matt Bodos was in the meeting. So, yeah, it was pretty productive. It was cool. You know, IRCHA has lost, pilots, attendance over the years.
Sure.
And nothing necessarily not IRCHA's fault, but just the fault of the hobby decline itself. So, you know, they kind of wanted some feedback and stuff like that. And we had a very long, very productive meeting with all the board. And they wanted to know if Matt and I were on board for this year and, you know, what ideas we had. And, you know, it was really good. It was really interesting. So, you know, Matt and I have had our, I wouldn't call it a controversy, but we've had our difference of opinion with regards to how IRCHA runs their event. But I think we ironed a lot of the misunderstandings out and like they explain a lot of stuff and you know why they have to do certain things the way they do them and how much money it costs to run the event. And it is expensive to run IRCHA, man. It's really expensive, so I don't blame them for like charging pilot fees and stuff like that.
Yeah,
I mean they have to commit to like the pilot's dinner like literally like now, like 6 months in advance. Yeah.
Whoa.
And they have to commit like I think over 500 or 600 people to get the good price, and the good price is still expensive. Like, I'm not obviously going to disclose pricing, but all I have to say is when you guys get charged, you know, $75 for the pilot fee, and a lot of people think is a lot of money. It's really not. Like
they're not making a killing off this.
No, they have to pay the AMA per head that attends, and then they have to pay for the dinner, and then obviously the tents.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you've seen the tent lineup they have there.
It's insane.
They spend thousands and thousands, dozens of thousands of dollars just in tents alone. So it's an expensive event to run, no question.
Sure.
And I mean, hell, when I used to run the Orlando Blowout, we spent upwards of like $4,000 or $5,000 in tents, and our tent row was insignificant compared to IRCHA's. It was like a tenth of what IRCHA was, or IRCHA is. So yeah, that was a good meeting and productive. So I think we're gonna probably bring one of those guys on our podcast in the future, talk a little bit more about IRCHA. They're really trying to get get people attend and kind of revitalize what IRCHA is all about. And you know, as much as we've bitched off and on about certain things about the event and how IRCHA's run and everything else, like at the end of the day, IRCHA is IRCHA, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's like the pinnacle of like, that's the number one event for helicopters in the world.
Yes.
And we need to do whatever it takes to I wouldn't call it to save it because there's nothing to save. I think it's still doing healthy, but
like maintain,
maintain it yeah, and maybe make it grow again, you know?
Yeah, it's a huge staple in the community. I mean, I don't care if you guys have been in it for a year or 10 years. I guarantee someone has either watched a video, seen a picture, or been to IRCHA.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, definitely.
So for the people listening, if you have not gone, you need to make the trip. I think it's worthwhile. Even if you only do it once, like some people go on, maybe that's not their cup of tea because they don't want to be in the middle of such a big event with so many pilots and it's perhaps intimidating, but they have to at least try it once. You might get hooked on it and want to go every year. You might just enjoy it and admire it and have a good time and not want to go back, but you have got to try it. You have got to experience it at least once.
There's so much to see there. I know people who have been there for the first time and they bring their helis and don't even pull them out of the car. Like, there's just so much to see. Any of your favorite pilots are going to be there. All your buddies from Facebook are probably going to be there. All the vendors that you guys like to support and, you know, new products are all going to be there. So it's a great, great place to kind of get a hands-on with, you know, everything you love about the hobby.
Yeah, absolutely. I also had a meeting with Ross Cooper Smith.
Did you?
Yeah, I don't want to talk much about this project, but you guys will soon find out. But he's working on this super cool, super cool little device or devices or set of devices, I guess you could say.
That's awesome.
That will enhance the flying experience for a lot of people, especially those who enjoy flying after dark.
Yes.
That's all I'm going to say.
It's very, very cool.
So that was cool stuff. And you know, I even forgot. We never even made an announcement, and some people found out through Facebook or whatever. But do you know that Smack Talk RC, every single episode ever filmed or ever put on tape, is now available for free on YouTube?
No kidding.
Every episode. Every single episode.
Wait. Even the ones that Bob and I did?
No. You guys are special.
I didn't. Clearly, I did not weigh in on this decision, which is fine.
Well, those are newer episodes.
Yeah, it's different.
That was the return of Smack Talk RC season.
Yeah.
Which was just taped under a year ago, or roughly a year ago, right?
Right.
So those are new episodes. They're relevant content. Yeah. They're set up on a different platform anyway. They weren't ever part of our main website there, SmackTalkRC.com.
Totally different.
But so those are still on Vimeo for people that want to pay for those. You can rent them or you can buy them and own them. Mm-hmm. But everything that was made prior to that, all the original Smack Talk episodes, I forgot how many are there, like over 40 or 50 or something
It's a lot.
They're all on YouTube. So if you go to YouTube, search for the Smack Talk RC channel. Mm-hmm. And you can watch them all. I was watching Learning 3D. Forgot what part number was, part 4 or 5, which was Piroflip. So I literally watched it myself.
Did you?
I taped that thing like in 2009, dude, or 2010. Yeah. So it's almost a decade.
Right.
And I watched it, and it's funny. Like, I'm holding this freaking little, I don't know what the hell the helicopter is, like a T-Rex 250 or something.
250, yeah.
With a fly bar and like explaining how to do Piroflips. And I was flying my T-Rex 700 Nitro.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but a lot of that stuff still carries through today, especially the instructional, the flying stuff. Yeah.
So for those of you who are lost right now, Smack Talk RC is an instructional series that Burt here, did with Bobby Watts, our good friend, back in the day. What was it, like 10 years ago you guys started?
I think we started at end of 2009, and we did it we released episodes on a monthly basis for years on end, I think for 3 or 4 years. I think we ended up with like 40 or 50 separate episodes.
Yeah. All with great, great content. But back in the day, it was a paid video. I forget how much it was. It was a couple bucks for a video and you download it.
Some of the short ones, like the Learning 3D series, which is a series that teaches people how to fly 3D, they were sold for anywhere between $1 and $2.50 a pop.
Right.
And then the full featured episodes, which were anywhere between 45 minutes and an hour plus in duration, were sold anywhere between $3 and $6 or something. So pretty inexpensive.
Yeah. But it was great content. Absolutely great content. Like Bert said, it's still relevant to today. Like, my favorite episode they ever did was on engine tuning for nitros, which is still very, very relevant to today's engines.
And that was the very first episode we ever did.
Very first one.
Yeah, and we had crappy cameras and crappy microphones and stuff.
Yeah, it worked. Yeah, it's all free now. So,
yeah,
a wealth of knowledge that you guys can take use of in this day and age.
A lot of hours of video. A lot of hours. So So that's cool. So for all of you that either didn't know about it or started the hobby after the series ended, or those of you who knew about it but were too cheap to spend the $3 or $5, you can now watch them for free on YouTube. Yeah. So it's pretty,
pretty
cool.
Sweet. Yeah. Pretty, pretty sweet.
So, yeah. Cool.
Well, should we get into it?
Let's get into it.
So,
what do you got?
Well, we're going to do the first year in the hobby, which is, like I said earlier, this is for people who are just kind of starting to get into the hobby. You know, you don't really know where to start. You don't really know to begin. This is going to be kind of a brief overview in a way. We're not going to get totally into it because if we did, it could go on for 10 hours.
Yeah. What to do, what to buy, where to get the help.
Right.
Stuff like that. So,
we're going to start with what to do. The first point I have here is to join the AMA.
Did you renew?
I did.
Okay.
Actually, the funny thing with my AMA is I renewed like 3 times in a row by accident.
So I have like 3 years.
Yeah, I'm going until like 2021 nice. Now. But join AMA. So for those of you who don't know what AMA is, it's called the Academy of Model Aeronautics. Basically, it's like a flying government that'll back you up if anything bad happens or just kind of have your back in a lot of different scenarios, right?
What's important about the AMA is that the AMA is an organization that lobby in Washington and with government agencies and government in general about the hobby.
Right.
So every time the government tries to do something stupid to screw with our hobby, which if you know recent times they've tried a lot of dumb stuff, the AMA tries the best they can to kind of control that, and they have people that are heavily involved in the political side of things and. You know, they try to advocate for us modelers.
Right.
So it is important from a insurance perspective, but it's also important from a political perspective, if you do care about the hobby, to support them so that in exchange they can be advocates for, they can support us in return in the eyes of our beloved government and government regulations and so forth. So.
Right. Another nice benefit, I think Bert kind of touched on that there, was insurance. So, God forbid, if you're out at an AMA-sanctioned flying field and something goes wrong, if you hit a car, if you hit a building, or even absolute worst, if you hit a person, the AMA has insurance set up just for this scenario. So, you can file a claim with them, and they'll help you out with that. But on top of that, there's a museum at the AMA site. You can fly at the AMA site. You get a magazine.
So beautiful motivation. Facilities. Beautiful facilities.
It's awesome.
I think 1,000 acres in Muncie, Indiana. So absolutely worth joining if you care at all about anything that's RC, whether it is flying RC per se.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's helicopters, airplanes, gliders, jets, whatever it is, you have got to join the AMA. So if you're new to this, just don't hesitate. Join the AMA, even if it's from a... Even if it's a donation to the AMA to help that organization, is well worth doing so.
Yep. New member is $75. I think kids are $50, maybe even less, actually, depending if they're in school. But either way, it's cheap. You pay it by the year. I'll always do it. I think it's just something great to do and great to have.
Yep, I agree.
But coming up next is find the local flying field and join the club. These can be kind of hard to find, but a brief Google search should bring it up.
Yeah. Some cities, some places have, almost every city in the United States has a flying club.
Right.
And if you want to know what your your closest AMA sanctioned club is on the AMA website, which is, I believe it's modelaircraft.org.
Mm-hmm.
There's a link to find clubs near you.
Right.
I'm not sure if you can search it by zip code or city and state or whatever it is. It's modelaircraft.org, ORG, because, it's not .com. There's a link to find clubs, and then you can find clubs near you. So it's worth going there to check it out because you might be surprised. Some clubs are not sanctioned. Nothing wrong with that, but you kind of want to join a club that is a sanctioned club if you can.
Sure.
So almost every city has them, and primarily they're airplane friendly more than helicopter friendly. But if you go out there with the right attitude and
don't intrude,
you're a likable person and you're respectful, then they're going to welcome you.
Right.
Most of these guys are very welcoming to new members, especially because they need. These clubs are usually non-for-profits, and they need the money, and so every member contributes with a membership fee. So definitely join a club because, number one, I think as a safety consideration, I think joining a club is very important.
Mm-hmm.
But also number two is because you're going to become friends. You're going to make friends with other modelers, whether they're into helicopters or airplanes or anything else. Mm-hmm. You know, it's always good to meet people that share the same interests and stuff like that. And even if those, say, primarily are airplane guys, it doesn't matter. They still have transmitters. They still know the basics of RC and servos and receivers and everything else.
Right.
And who knows, you might convert one of those guys into helicopters.
Right.
Stuff like that happens, or they might convert you and not convert you, but they might get you spike, you know, get your interest going about airplanes.
Yeah.
You might find yourself flying both, you know,
just kind of spread the wealth, spread the knowledge.
Yeah.
Some other things to look out for is what to do. When you're going to choose a brand, of course, right now, if you're going to choose a brand, as long as you pick a name brand, you really can't go wrong, whether it's SAB, a line. I mean, there's so many brands out there right now, I can't even name them all. You can't really go wrong. But what I would recommend you do is you find whatever the local people are flying and choose that brand. Because if you have an issue, they'll likely know how to fix it. Or if you become an expert on it, you can help them. So together you can kind of learn the ins and outs of each aircraft and each manufacturer, you know?
Yeah.
So
yeah,
like absolutely. If you find like an issue with it and they've found a solution for it or tips for building, you know, it just kind of helps everyone out. And same goes for radio too.
Yeah.
And, you know, if they're going to fly Futaba, then I would recommend flying Futaba, or if V-Bar, Spectrum, whatever it is, I would just stick whatever they have, because then they'll be able to help you to their best of their ability if you have issues.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yep. And going back to the AMA, I had to kind of backtrack a little bit here, but I found the link. It's actually modelaircraft.org/club-finder. And then you can search it by city, state, or zip code, and you can specify within how many miles of you, and then it'll list all the clubs that are sanctioned with the AMA. So that's a really cool feature to have.
Nice.
You know, like you said, Kyle, you also get the magazine, the Model Aviation magazine. You can also like get other magazines, like they have Sport Aviator. They have a bunch of stuff like that. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So, all right, keep going where you were at. I apologize. I kind of detoured that a little bit here.
Like I said, find out what your local guys are flying as far as airframe and radio. I can carry that through with servos and electronics. Just to be able to get you guys set up as easy as possible. If you fly what everyone else is flying, then it'll be easiest to get going. But
yeah.
Otherwise, try and find your local hobby shop. There's probably someone there that'll specialize in RC helicopters. I know back at home in Rochester, New York, that was my dad. Whenever someone would call needing help with a helicopter, the call would get immediately redirected to him. Or if he was there, he would take the call and just kind of get people set up, take them out to the field, and get them going. So head over to the local hobby shop and make sure it's an actual radio-controlled hobby shop, not like a craft store
sort of thing. Hobby Lobby.
Yeah,
those hobby guys lobby. Do a different kind of hobby.
Yeah, but it sucks because brick-and-mortar hobby shops are going away fast.
I know, but a local brick-and-mortar hobby shop is so important to the hobby, though, you know?
Yes,
and it sucks to see them go away, but they're important for a lot of reasons. Number one, it's not just the parts availability that, you know, if you have a boo-boo on a Saturday afternoon, you can go to the local hobby shop, buy your part, and then be back at the field Sunday if so you wish.
Mm-hmm.
But also, like, you're always going to find somebody there that's pretty knowledgeable. And for the most part, if you're experienced in helicopters, you've been doing this for a long time, then you will find that you're more knowledgeable than the local hobby shop guy. But for the newbies, it's a great tool because a lot of those guys know what they're doing and they can teach you and guide you through the process.
Right.
And I know, for example, our local hobby shop, the owner was still is to a degree. He's been doing it all his life, but he was very motivated to fly. He really liked helicopters, loved helicopters, and he was knowledgeable enough. He guided me through a lot of questions and a lot of concerns that I had way back when I started. And he even recommended the right machines. You would think that they would try to sell you or upsell you on the biggest, latest, and greatest. But he was really honest when it came to what to recommend and why, you know?
Sure.
So local hobby shops are invaluable when it comes to this. And I wish there were more out there. But, you know, if you don't have that local hobby shop, you know, you still can call your online retailer. And a lot of the people that answer the phone will be able to help you. You know, obviously it's not the same because you're over the phone, but they'll still be able to help you, us included. So, yeah.
Sure. So cool. Basically that's it. Just join the AMA first and foremost, and then join the local club and try and get some help from the dudes out there.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Definitely.
Get yourself up and running.
Yeah. So your notes say, Why get AMA? I think we covered that.
Yeah, we did. That covers everything else.
Interesting note, though. Sanctioned events. More than 2,500 events annually, huh?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. A lot of times, if you guys go... If you guys have ever been to an event and it's time to register, you're going to fill out two forms. One is for the club to find out who you are and what your AMA number is. And the other one is for the AMA to find out who is at each event and all that. And the reason for that, if it's an AMA-sanctioned event, is AMA will back up the event and support it. I think specifically for more of an insurance reason than anything, but at least it'll kind of help promote it. And I think they put it on a list somewhere on the AMA website. But definitely, definitely join AMA. It's probably the most important, essential thing to do when you're joining the hobby.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, you had other notes here about why get AMA assistance in getting, keep, in obtaining and keeping flying sites. Mm-hmm. They do help people find, you know, organizations find flying sites when they're looking for sites and things like that.
Yeah.
And then, of course, like I said before, all the lobbying that they're going to do in Washington on our behalf, especially because you know, the drone people have kind of screwed the landscape for us a little bit, in the sense that, you know, they fly them everywhere, and that's created, it's put RC on the radar and under the radar for a lot of these government mm-hmm. institutions, especially the FAA.
Yeah.
So the AMA, it's kind of like a helper when it comes to unreasonable regulations and so forth. So,
right. Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
So is it time?
I believe it's time.
Is it time?
Let's do it.
Yes, it's okay. Time for coat race for this week.
Here we go. So
we have three codes. Okay, codes.
We're not going to tell you what any of them do. You got to figure that out on your own.
You got to figure that out on your own.
But
on your own.
To narrow it down, they are only valid for SAB, BK Servo, and Switch Rotor Blades products.
Yeah, that's it.
So,
and unfortunately, we're out of Switch Blades. Hopefully, by the time this airs, we'll have the stock, because that shipment is about to arrive.
Beautiful.
Either Wednesday or Thursday. So, but three codes, like Kyle said, we're not telling you what they do, mm-hmm. but they're valid for SAB, BK, and Switch products.
Mm-hmm.
All right, ready?
Go first.
Okay, the first code is BKRC165.
Second one is BKRC172.
And the last one is BKRC134.
They are valid until January 30th. First come, first serve. And it's one-time use only in general. So
nice.
Cool.
All right, let's move on. So what next?
What to buy? This is very opinionated, I would say, because I know some people out there are going to disagree with what I'm about to say. I think you and I are on the same page when it comes to this. But what to buy for your first helicopter? What I recommend anyone who asks me is to get something like a 500 size machine. You know, it only takes one pack. They're pretty easy to set up. They fit in the back of your car. They're more stable than anything small. They are more expensive, but I think it's a good size to learn setup, learn soldering, learn your mechanic skills, and then it's also something you can take to the park and fly.
I think what's important here is that you want to look for something simple.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't want to get into something and inexpensive within reason.
Within reason.
But you don't want to get into something too small.
Right.
I feel like we've talked about this many times, and I've discussed this with a lot of people. Some people agree with me. Some people disagree.
Mm-hmm.
The reason why I don't recommend something small is because you are guaranteed to go back to the hobby shop or the online retailer and buy a bigger helicopter.
Mm-hmm.
If you like this and you're committed to this, it's guaranteed you're going to do that within 90 days.
Sure.
Within 90 days.
Absolutely.
You go and you buy an Oxy, or you buy a Fireball, or you buy something really small, or a Blade helicopter, like a 450 Blade. You are, I almost can assure you, within 90 days, within 4 to 6 months at the most, you're going to be back buying something bigger, mm-hmm. because it's not going to be, you're not going to be happy with it.
Exactly.
It's not going to have the presence in the air. It doesn't have the visibility in the air. It's harder to fly. It's more mm-hmm. susceptible to the wind.
Mm-hmm.
It's more cumbersome to repair just because the parts are smaller, especially mm-hmm. when you're not experienced wrenching.
Yeah.
It takes a lot more time and effort to repair these things. And the cost difference is there, sure, but it's not very drastic if you stay with something in the 500 size, right?
Right.
Even a 570 Goblin or something, or a T-Rex 550 or a Synergy, you know, 5 series, like, mm-hmm. you know, and what's the Synergy? The
516.
The 516, or, yeah. you know, Another thing that I would discourage people from doing, which is completely opposite to what I would have been saying if this was 10 years ago, mm-hmm. is I would discourage people from starting with nitro.
Absolutely.
I would start absolutely with an electric and single battery pack. Mm-hmm. So anything you can get that uses a single pack, it could be up to a 500, up to a 550, 570, something like that, max.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Right. Just
single pack, easy to charge, mm-hmm. you know, relatively inexpensive.
Yeah.
You know, you can buy 3 or 4 packs.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be the way to go.
Yep, I agree. Especially when you get in those bigger sizes. If you've never built maybe even anything or let alone a helicopter before, you're going to have to learn how to build and work on stuff and tighten screws. Because if you get something like, this is not bashing by any means, but if you get something small like an Oxy 2, those screws are small. And if you over-tighten them, they're going to snap. And if you snap multiple bolts, you're just going to get frustrated. But if you get something bigger like a 500 size, now you're looking at like M2.5, M3, you know, bigger bolts are going to be harder to snap, more forgiving when you're building it. So
I totally agree. Totally agree. But another thing that's important that goes along with buying a small machine, but not too small, is stick to the same machine.
Yes.
Stick to the same machine. Stick to the same machine. Stick to the same machine. Mm-hmm. Don't buy a 500 today and then say in 2 months, oh, no, I should get a 570. And then, mm-hmm. well, I prefer the Synergy. 516, and then maybe I should try the TRX 550. It's gonna hurt you. Mm-hmm. Stick to that machine until you get to a level where you're comfortable enough flying around and doing at least what I would consider sport flying. Mm-hmm. You want to be able to do forward flight in both directions at various speeds. You know, I've met people before that say, oh, I can do forward flight, and then they take off, they're in a hover, and then they start flying forward, and they're kind of going, I would call it not necessarily out of control, but they can't change their speed. They're like stuck.
Right.
You know, they push forward elevator and they give a collective and they're just hauling ass. And then when they transition back into a hover, it's a little shaky. And no, just practice control. You need to be able to fly proficiently forward flight. That's the most important thing of it all, is forward flight.
Yep.
Learn how to fly it like a real helicopter. Learn to make left-hand turns, right-hand turns. Learn to do it slow. Learn to do it fast. Learn to do it low. Learn to do it high.
Mm-hmm. Control.
Learn nose and hover. Yeah. Learn tail and hover, obviously, and sideways hover. If you get to that level, then, yeah, start playing with other machines to see what satisfies you. But I feel like that's an important benchmark. And it's sad because nowadays I see people that can do TikToks, but they cannot do forward flight. Or they cannot hover nose in.
Right.
And that's screwed up, man. That makes no sense.
Yeah, learning to run before they can walk.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you don't pick up a motorcycle and before you learn how to ride it, you know, at slow speeds, you don't learn how to do wheelies.
Right.
You know, you learn how to ride that thing at low speeds, you know, in a parking lot in complete control using your clutch and your rear brake and know that combination of the two and how it works before you go out there and try to do something crazy like a wheelie or, you know, haul ass or, you know, lean in the high-speed turns. It's the same with helicopters. You should learn how to fly forward flight, period.
Yep.
And that opens the door to a lot of stuff that really does help. So
learn to control the model and be able to put it where you want it. Pretty cut and dry simple. But next I would say is a simulator. When you're learning to fly, this is absolutely 100% essential.
Oh, boy.
You don't agree?
Yeah.
I mean,
it just sucks because it's boring as hell.
It's boring, but it'll pay for itself 10 times over. You can crash on that thing all day long and not cost yourself a dime, literally. They're relatively affordable nowadays. Like, if I think Real Flight is maybe $200-$300, and then there's others that are, you know, software downloads if you already have a radio and a dongle. I know there's AccuRC and Next Simulator and Real Flight. There's so many out these days, you can't really go wrong, but it is 100% essential, in my opinion.
And this is kind of a shameless plug, but there's only one simulator that works with a stick mover. So if you have any considerations to go, not to say that you have to get a stick mover, that's up to you, but if you do want to get a stick mover down the road, I feel like you have to go with the Next simulator. So so absolutely. So simulator, whether it is Next, AccuRC, I mean, there's so many out there. Real Flight.
Can't go wrong.
Really, you can't go wrong with any of them. It's an incredibly important tool. And as we've discussed in previous episodes, practice in the simulator, crank the wind to change the variables around and the wind direction and stuff, and practice.
It's only as beneficial as you make it. If you go on there and play around and horse around and, you know, play with the flying cars or flying lawnmowers, well, you're not going to get anything out of it. But if you, you know, crank the wind and actually learn your orientations and sit down and focus, I think it's probably the best tool you can buy, hands down.
Yeah, I agree.
Hands down. But next is you do not need the best of the best to learn to hover. You do not need the fastest servos, the highest RPM, the best blades to learn to hover. I think there's absolutely nothing wrong with getting yourself into a budget setup. If you want to get some simpler blades, maybe some slower servos, plastic case servos, I don't know. Just keep it simple. You don't need, you know, $400 servos just to learn to hover. Those are great down the line when you can feel the difference. But when you're starting out, there's nothing wrong getting a basic setup.
Yeah, I agree. Don't need to get the best servos there is. Don't need to get the, you know, the most expensive kit there is. Don't need to get the best motor there is. Don't need to get the best DSC there is. Now, there is one consideration. It depends on the person's level of commitment in the hobby, right?
True.
So when I started with top-of-the-line stuff way back in the day. Like when I finally committed myself, okay, I want to fly. My first real helicopter, real, I say, quote-unquote, was that I could learn more than just basic for flight or hovering was a Raptor 50. And I got the best of the best that I could get at the time. You know, I think back in those days it was a 602 gyro maybe from Futaba and like
601,
and it was like I forgot what it was. Some I don't remember the Futaba had great servos like that long ago, but I got whatever the best I could, and the reason being is I thought, well, these are going to last me through my you know, as I progressed, I'm not going to have to be changing stuff.
Right.
And it paid off because I got better and it got to the point where, like, I was really enjoying the equipment. If I would have went with the cheapest of the cheapest servos and the cheapest pipe and the cheapest motor and the cheapest gyro, I probably would have ended up spending more money because I would have, like, gotten, you know, another gyro later or another set of servos later. So it depends on your level of commitment. If you feel like you're going to be able to practice and you got the bug and you really want to progress, then don't skimp on equipment because a lot of these electronics will transfer to the next helicopter.
Sure.
So that's important too.
Yep.
But I do agree to your point, Kyle, that like you don't need the best of the best to learn to hover or to learn to fly forward or even to learn basic sport flying or even basic 3D. You really don't need it. So.
But to hinge on that, you also don't want to get cheap Chinese crap.
No. Stay away from clones.
Stay away from clones and stay away from Chinese clones or Chinese helis. I mean, I can't. I don't want to sit here and name names because I don't want to give them any sort of press whatsoever. But if you have any doubt of what to get, just go to any reputable store. Go to Aiming Hobbies, BK Hobbies, Heli Direct. Only find helis.
But be careful with the word Chinese, though, because a lot of good brands are made in China, too.
This is true. So. Yeah, they're all made in China. What I meant by Chinese brands is like Birds of the Clones or the cheap
or
like
brands
mall.
That don't have the backing of a company.
Right.
And, you know, one thing that I also tell people, like I speak on behalf of people living in the U.S. I know this also applies to other countries, but if the brand doesn't have support in the United States or if you're German and your brand, this brand doesn't have support in Germany, and by support I mean like, you know, a real distributor that takes care of the brand, that takes care of warranty, that brings in the brand and distributes it to other dealers or retails it to the customers or even a team, stay away from that brand. You don't want that because you're not going to have the support when you have a problem that you would have from a brand that is well supported in the country. So, for example, in the United States, I don't want to exclude anybody from my list, but just to name a couple of brands that come to mind, you have Synergy, of course, owned and operated in the United States. Helicopters are made in China, but they're made under the strict control of Matt Botos himself, and he is a top-notch guy that will give you any of the support that you guys need. You know, Gowie has been supported by another U.S. company called Empire Hobby. You know, Align has support in the U.S. through, what's the hobby shop?
Enterprise.
Enterprise Hobby. So obviously SAB supported by us, SAB USA. So you want brands that, you know, and I'm sorry if I'm excluding brands here. I know there's lots of different brands. I don't mean to be rude, but do your homework and make sure that you're supporting a brand that has support in your country.
Right.
And that has, you know, maybe not necessarily a fly team, but a company that stands behind that brand.
Right.
If you go to China and you buy some off-brand thing, whether it is a clone or not, you're going to be on your own. Yeah. That's all there is to it. Yeah. So
if there's something goes wrong with it, they're not going to back you up. Part supply could be difficult. So pick something that's widely available and pretty solid.
And definitely stay away from clones. Definitely. Yeah, like you're hurting the hobby by supporting a clone, period.
Yep. So, hands down. Hands down. But if you're looking at a list, if you've decided on a manufacturer and you're looking through the kits and you're overwhelmed, just call the hobby shop. If you're going to call, I don't know, Shameless Plug, BK Hobbies, or A-Main, or Highly Direct, any of them, they'll guide you. I mean, I feel like we get a call at least once a week because someone's like, hey, I'm just getting into the hobby. I have no idea what I need.
Yeah, and no, there's a lot of good hobby shops. Just support them. I mean, there's all kinds. There's Lore Heli, anything Heli, only fine Helis.
Yeah.
Heli Direct, A-Main. I mean, you know.
There's a million of them.
Yeah, there's so many hobby shops.
Yeah.
So,
Graves RC, if you're local to Orlando, or even on the phone. I think Mark Graves does support on the phone. So, Mark Graves at Graves RC is a good choice.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
And the last point, very quick, Bert already said it, but I'm going to reiterate, don't fly Nitro for your first heli. Nitro's great, it's fun, but it has its place, and I certainly believe it's not for a first heli.
Yeah, I think once you're used to building and flying, and you're accustomed to the whole thing, and, you know, working with a helicopter, you know, replacing blades, fixing parts, and doing everything else, setups, and you get accustomed to your flyberless system of choice and everything else, then maybe at that time, if you want to go into Nitro, then get a Nitro and give it a shot, because you will remove all these other variables out of the equation, and you're just going to focus at that time in learning the Nitro itself and the tuning. So,
right. Yeah,
agreed.
Moving along, where to get help? If you find yourself in kind of a remote location, maybe there's no hobby shop to rely on, maybe even struggling to find a flying club, but you still want to do this, where can you get help? First and foremost, Facebook groups. The biggest one available right now is RC Heli Hangout. I think it has close to like 3,500 members or something.
Yeah.
It's great. And RC Heli Hangout is absolutely awesome. It's run by Frank Mordeos and Chris Nutt. They have a bunch of other admins in there as well helping out. But you can just post up a question, and there's 3,500 people there waiting to help you out.
Yeah, and there's CP Helis. There's all kinds of different groups. Just join a group.
Nitro Nation, I think, is one.
Nitro Nation, if you get into Nitro, of course. There's that. I think that's important. It used to be forums. Yeah. If you are not a Facebook kind of guy and you're listening to this, join a forum. Mm-hmm. They're not as popular anymore, but HeliFreak.com still has some hardcore group of people there that are willing to help. And, you know, you might not get immediate help or as many people to chime in as you would on one of these popular Facebook groups, but nonetheless, you're still going to get the help you need.
Right.
So
plenty of knowledge to go around. Then just local hobby shop if you happen to have it. But if you don't, then I would say do your best to do the online group or Smack Talk RC.
And that was the ideal combination when I started the hobby. I had Graves RC, which was my local hobby shop, and I had Torches, which was my local flying club. And between the two, I had unlimited help, you know, between some of the experienced pilots at Torches and Mark Graves himself at Graves, I had plenty of help. And, you know, fortunately, if you're, like Kyle said, if you're not in an area like that, just give your local hobby shop a call. Mm-hmm. If you have your favorite online retailer a call, if you don't have a local hobby shop, or get online and do some research on these groups, or HeliFreak or any of these online resources. Yeah. There's
plenty of knowledge to go around, and right now it's all free pretty much.
Yeah,
it is. It's all free knowledge.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Good stuff to pass around, but
it's cool.
Yeah, just try and reach out, get some help. That's kind of a very brief overview.
And last but not least, it's not in the notes, but go to events if you can.
Yes.
If you can.
Yes.
Money permitting and everything else, time permitting. You know, if you have an event that's within 2 to 3 hours of your area, take a trip down there for the day. Even if it's a round trip, take the trip, because you're going to learn a lot from going to an event. And don't be afraid to ask questions. If you're new and you're struggling with something, bring your helicopter, even if you don't fly it. Mm-hmm. Bring it to the event. Find somebody. I assure you, you're going to find somebody that's always willing to help you. Mm-hmm. They're going to look at your heli. They're going to exchange ideas. They're going to tell you what's wrong with it if they know. And more than likely, you're going to walk away or drive home thinking, holy shit, this was worthwhile, because I got the help I needed to fix my whatever vibration or my you know, setup issue, or why my throttle servo, my tilt servo didn't do this or that.
Right.
So yeah, don't be afraid to go to events. They're an incredible source of help for a lot of people. So
absolutely.
Yeah. Cool.
Well, we have one listener question we can cover.
That's it.
That's one, and I think it's a pretty fun one. Someone reached out to me by the name of Yusuf. Sorry if I'm butchering that. It's Y-U-S-U-F. Yusuf, he asks, what part of the helicopter should you focus on when learning 3D? I don't even know how to answer that one.
Like an impossible question.
I have never,
like, I have never looked at one part of the helicopter. Exactly. Never. The only exception to that is, like, I'm sure it's the same with you, is if you're doing something really low to the ground, then you're exactly. focusing on the part that's closest to exactly. the ground. But you're not staring at it. You're just, like, glancing at it.
It's hard. Yeah.
You're paying more attention to that part while you're still scanning the whole thing.
Right. I think, I don't know.
Look at everything.
Yeah. You just focus on the whole thing. I don't know. Like you said, whatever's lowest, like, for example, if I'm going to do a stationary backflip, whatever's closest. So it'll be a tail, and then it's going to be a blade, then it's going to be a tail again. I just kind of rotate back and forth through that. But if I was going to pick one thing, like in a hurricane, what do I look at? Probably the canopy or the main frame, because it's biggest and easiest to see.
In a hurricane, yeah. In a hurricane, for example, I cue a lot on the tail.
Yeah.
To see if I'm feeding the right amount of tail input or if I'm lagging on the tail.
Yeah.
And I cue on the disc if I can see the disc, because that tells me the angle, right?
True.
But I'm mainly seeing the canopy, from the canopy to the boom, because that shows me if the tail's okay. That shows me if the angle's okay. And I glance over at the disc if you can see it. If you're flying the dark blades or whatever, or the weather's not right, you won't see the disc. But I don't know, man. It changes. It's like it's just a whole scan of everything at all times, isn't it?
It was a crazy question, because I've never even thought about that. What do you focus on? I don't know. The whole thing. Just rotate through all the parts.
I kind of thought about that years ago, and I just never had an answer for it.
It's tough.
Because somebody asked me that same question years and years ago, and I just didn't have an answer. Because you just literally, you're looking at everything at all times. You're scanning the whole thing all the time, kind of.
Well, isn't it kind of like driving a car? Because you're not looking at the road that's directly in front of the car. You look what's ahead of the car, and then you kind of look what's going on around you. So, I don't know, kind of similar. You just kind of look around and see what's going on.
Yeah.
In a way.
Yeah. It's weird. It's not explainable.
It's tough.
I think you develop, maybe every person scans different parts, and I think it's just, and nobody really knows it. Because if you don't know what you're looking at, it means you're... If you're not having to think where to look at, that's a good thing, because that means that you're flying by muscle memory, and you're not really thinking what your input should be.
Right.
And that's important. If you think what stick you have to move in and which direction, you're in trouble. You're going to crash.
But one thing that we can add onto this is when you do lose orientation, because we've all been in a scenario where it's like, man, I have no idea what it's doing right now. If it's dark out, if you're trying a new maneuver, you get lost. The one thing I try and always pick out is the tail fin.
Why the tail fin?
Because what I can do is I can jerk the tail, and if the tail moves which way I think it's going, then I can pick out where the tail fin is, and it's easier for me to get orientation. Really? Nowadays, I have colored tail fins. I have a white tail fin or a yellow tail fin.
No way.
So it's easier for me to see it. So if I have kind of guess where it's at, I just jab the tail, and then I can kind of pick it up from there. Especially when I'm flying in low light. If I get it way out there in low light, then it's kind of like, I think I know.
I think every time that I lost orientation, I just hit the ground. So I didn't have that choice.
That too. But
the best loss of orientation was, I have to tell the story. It'll be brief.
Oh, I know what this one is.
In Maryland at the MHA Fun Fly. This must have been 13 or 14 years ago. And I was flying a miniature aircraft 50 Nitro. Bobby and I were sharing this helicopter at the night fly, because we didn't have but one set of blades, I thought. So we couldn't fly each one of our helicopters. So we just rigged this one, and we were sharing. He would fly one time, I would fly one time, he would fly one time. And then needless to say, the batteries on the blades started to get dimmer and dimmer, because by now we had 6 or 7 flights without charging the blades.
Of course.
So I was, of course, the unlucky one that took it up to the auto rotation at the end of my last flight. And I just kept going higher and higher, thinking, this is cool, I'm going to go super high, and I'm just going to do this like super long auto. And eventually, as I started to climb, the blade started to dim more and more and more, and then I just couldn't tell which way it was. So I looked at Bobby, and Bobby was standing next to me, and I'm like, Bobby, like, I can't see this thing. And he's like, well, what is wrong with you? Are you stupid? Like, give it to me. And so I gave him the transmitter, and then he couldn't see it. And then he gave me the transmitter, and like, every time, like, I thought I had it, it's like, okay, it's right set up. So I give it positive, and then it made this noise, like it's just going like sideways or something. So I just try to pirouette it or come off the pitch to see if like it stops moving. But I mean, this thing is a speck, like way up there, like so freaking huge, so freaking high. And I swear to God, Bobby and I exchanged the transmitter at least 2 or 3 times. And we would each try click into hold, out of hold, and then it would make these noises. It just goes a little farther and a little farther. And then eventually, I don't know if it was me or Bobby, one of the two said, dude, it's done. So we hit throttle hold and just let it go. There was just no way. There was no way. We could see it, but we could never figure out which way it was pointing or going, if it was upright or sideways. Obviously, it was never the right way.
Right.
So obviously, we also didn't have flybar because with a good Neo or any good flybarless system, if we would have gotten that son of a bitch to be right upright, we probably would have been able to bring it back because it kind of stays in that last orientation, right?
Right.
But a flybar didn't do that. If you're upright and you're not flying it down, it'll roll on its own, right?
Sure.
So needless to say, we hit the throttle hold and the thing just took probably about 1 minute before it hit the ground way out there in the distance. And then everybody that was there, we had 5, 6, 7 cars, I don't know, 10 cars. We all drove out there it was a cornfield, but we didn't tear the corn. It was off season, so it was pretty much empty and dry. Mm. And we found it. We found it way out there. It had to be like a mile away from where we were. And, thank God it was all big open fields, all farmland. It was no homes, no chance of hurting anybody, but it still was stupid to do. But night flying at a fun fly, baby. But it was fun. That's probably the only time when I've really lost it to where I've had time. I had time. Like this whole process must have taken 3 minutes, and we still couldn't get it.
Was it destroyed? And
no. What? That's the weird thing, man. It just the way it hit. It didn't break frames. It broke the boom. It broke the blades, but it didn't break frames. It didn't even break the landing gear. It wasn't that bad.
Wow.
But yeah, man, it just, yeah.
That's so awesome.
And, the blades were absolutely dead. The battery had depleted completely. And those were custom-made blades. We couldn't get night blades. Right. They weren't easy to get back in those days. So there were a couple of people that used to make blades for us. One of them was Troy Blackwell from Alabama. He quit the hobby a while back. But he used to make night blades based on, you would just give him a set of blades of any favorite blade you had, and he would just turn them into night blades.
Really?
Yeah, and they were pretty freaking cool because they were bright and you could pick the colors you wanted. Unlike the commercially readily available blades that were kind of dim and, not quite the same. So, right.
Pretty sweet.
Yeah, so losing orientation is not a good thing. Don't try it at home. Yeah. Paint your tail fin different color.
Do something, please.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Too funny.
Oh, boy.
Well,
I think that wraps it up.
Yeah, that's a good note to end on right there.
Yeah, no doubt. Cool. Well, So, send us your suggestions. Oh boy, send us your suggestions and your ideas. Thank you, Chris, for the phone call today. We'll do a future episode about more in depth V-bar stuff like apps and some other stuff.
And
send us your ideas and suggestions. We can be reached on Facebook at The BK Official, which is BK Hobby's Facebook page. Instagram is also The BK Official.
Mm-hmm.
How about you?
I can be found on Facebook.com/KyleStaceyRC.
Yep. You can get a hold of me via Facebook.com/BurtRC or Instagram at Burt_Kammer.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
And we'll talk to you next week when you will be able to download episode 30.
Wow.
All right. See you all.
See ya.